It is Friday, June the 9th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, former FBI director testifying about his encounters with President Trump. Also ahead, Britain's parliamentary election and another missile test by North Korea.
These are to demonstrate new capabilities, to suggest that they're advancing and covering new areas, but also to give Kim Jong-un some internal cover from the hits he's taking from the Security Council and elsewhere.
Coming up, what's trending on social media and a new version of the film, The Mummy. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. Fired U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation Director James Comey here in the United States, steering clear of giving his opinion about whether President Trump attempted to obstruct justice when he asked him to back off investigating ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Asked on Thursday if the request rises to obstruction of justice, Comey told the Senate Intelligence Committee that he did not know and that it would be Special Counsel Robert Mueller's job to sort that out. Earlier in his testimony, Comey also said he does not think it would be fair for him to say whether the conversation he had with President Trump was an effort to obstruct the FBI probe into Russian activities during last year's election. Here is an exchange between Senator Roy Blunt, President Trump's Republican Party, and Comey about President Trump firing Comey, Blunt speaking first.
If the president hadn't terminated your service, would you still be, in your opinion, the director of the FBI today?
Yes, sir.
So you took as a direction from the president something that you thought was serious and troublesome, but continued to show up for work the next day?
Yes, sir.
And 6 weeks later, we're telling the president on March the 30th that he was not personally the target of any investigation.
Correct. On March the 30th, and I think again on April 11th as well, I told him we're not investigating him personally. That was true.
Well, the point to me, the concern to me there is that all these things are going on. You now, in retrospect, or at least you now to this committee, that these were, you had serious concerns about what the president had, you believe, directed you to do, and had taken no action, hadn't even reported up the chain of command, assuming you believe there isn't up the chain of command, that these things had happened. Do you have a sense of that looking back, that that was a mistake?
No. In fact, I think no action was the most important thing I could do to make sure there was no interference with the investigation.
Comey also contradicted Mr. Trump's assertion that Comey requested a meeting with him to discuss his job. Here's an exchange between Senator Angus King, who is an independent, and Comey about the White House dinner, King speaking first.
In his interview with Lester Holt on NBC, the president said, "I had dinner with him. He wanted to have dinner because he wanted to stay on." Is this an accurate statement?
No, sir.
Did you in any way initiate that dinner?
No. He called me at my desk at lunchtime and asked me, was I free for dinner that night? And called himself and said, can you come over for dinner tonight? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, six work. I think he said six first. And then he said, I was going to invite your whole family, but we'll do that next time. I wanted you to come over. And is that a good time? I said, sir, whatever works for you. And then he said, how about 6:30? And I said, whatever works for you, sir. And then I hung up and had to call my wife and break a date with her. I was supposed to take her out to dinner that night.
That's one of the all-time great excuses for breaking a date.
Yeah. In retrospect, I love spending time with my wife. I wish I'd been there that night.
Comey also told the Senate he asked a friend to leak the contents of his memos about meetings with President Trump. Here's a question and answer between Comey and Senator Blunt. Blunt speaking first.
What kind of information did you give to a friend?
That the Flynn conversation, that the president had asked me to let the Flynn, I mean, I'm forgetting my exact own words, but the conversation in the Oval Office.
So you didn't consider your memo or your sense of that conversation to be a government document? You considered to be somehow your own personal document that you could share with the media as you wanted to?
Correct.
Through a friend?
I understood this to be my recollection recorded of my conversation with the president. As a private citizen, I felt free to share that. I thought it very important to get it out.
Comey's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee was his first chance to speak in public about the meetings and conversations he had with President Trump during the months before he was fired by Mr. Trump. As we've heard, the former head of the largest U.S. law enforcement agency was questioned for about 3 hours alternately by Republicans and Democratic senators and independents who caucus with the Democrats. Later on Thursday, the Senate Intelligence Committee reconvened a closed-door session to hear more from Comey on subjects he said he should not be discussing in public. Senators met in a portion of the U.S. Capitol building, configured, as a secure, compartmented information facility built in to resist eavesdropping. President Trump's attorney, Mark Cassawis, went public after Comey's testimony before that Senate Intelligence Committee, and Cassawis said that Mr. Trump never told Comey, "I need loyalty, I expect loyalty," as Comey said he did. And Cassawis went on to say it was Comey who retaliated after being fired by disclosing what Cassawis says was privileged information to a friend who went public with that memo we heard about earlier Comey had in the Oval Office meeting with Mr. Trump. VOA's Philip Alexio talks with Renato Mariotti, a former federal prosecutor in Chicago who has handled many obstruction cases. He is now a partner with the law firm Thompson Coburn and offers reaction to Cassawis's comments.
I thought it was very smart for the president to speak through his lawyer today as a person who represents individuals who are the subject of criminal investigations. I would advise my clients to do the same thing. So I thought that was smart. And I thought that the president's lawyer, Mr. Cassawis, did a good job of accepting the parts of Mr. Comey's account that were favorable to the president and disputing the ones that did not. Some people have said that was inconsistent, but I think that's what most lawyers would have done in that circumstance. I do have some quibbles with what Mr. Cassawis said. For example, he really faulted Mr. Comey for providing some information to a law professor, which ultimately made it into the hands of the press. He said that that was illegal, and I think that is incorrect. It's an incorrect statement of the law. It was not illegal for Mr. Comey to do that.
Now, why is that? Because a lot of people are talking about that James Comey wanted to release some information, his notes, and so he gave it to this, what they're calling a surrogate, I guess, a friend of his, and then that person goes to the media, and people are talking about that as a leak, and of course, leaks can be a felony. And why was this not an issue?
It can be a crime to leak classified material. Mm-hmm. The conversations that Mr. Comey had with the president weren't classified. Now, the word that Mr. Cassawis used was privileged, and I assume he means executive privilege because no one believes that Mr. Comey was acting as a lawyer. In other words, that there was an attorney-client privilege there. So if this was a matter of executive privilege is a legal doctrine that protects certain information from being revealed to other branches of the government. In other words, it's a shield that the executive can use to prevent the legislative branch of the government from forcing them to reveal certain information. But here, Mr. Comey was a private citizen, and there's no mechanism under which executive privilege can be used as a sword against a private citizen to prevent him or her from speaking about matters that were handled or undertaken while they were in the executive branch. It's just there's no legal support for that. And so that was a misstatement by Mr. Cassawis.
Okay, interesting. And then finally, looking at the information that's come out over time, how much longer do you think this investigation like this can go on?
I would be shocked if the investigation did not go on for at least a year.
Okay, another year.
Mm-hmm. It's going to take a long time. I expect Mr. Mueller to be very careful, very thorough, and very deliberate in his investigation. He's handling a matter involving the President of the United States, a matter of the utmost importance to our country, and a matter that has many different aspects. involving Russia, involving obstruction, involving leaks, and all sorts of other things. I expect Mr. Mueller to chase down every lead, to speak to every individual, to gather lots of documents and evidence, and to examine it very carefully before making any decision.
Renato Mariotti is a former federal prosecutor in Chicago. He's had many obstruction cases in his career. He is now a partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn, and he was speaking with my colleague Philip Alexio. We're going to turn our attention now to International Edition's Andrew Palcheski for how all of this is trending on social media.
Well, the internet is still talking about hashtag Comey Day, former FBI Director James Comey's Senate testimony on Thursday. And while there were lots of clips from that testimony circulating on social media, one in particular is capturing attention. It's the moment when Comey said that he's seen tweets from President Trump and that there are tapes, supposedly, of their conversation. And, quote, "Lordy, I hope there are tapes." Many people making light of Comey using that word lordy, saying it might be the first time it's been used in a congressional hearing. And while many of the trending topics and hashtags weren't surprising, including hashtag Comey Day, hashtag Comey Hearings, and Comey's name, there were some other names trending aside from James Comey's, like California Senator Kamala Harris. Social media first started talking about her on Wednesday after her pointed questioning of the Director of National Intelligence and the Director of the National Security Agency. On Thursday, she was trending again during Comey's testimony. Now, some on social media praised her pointed questions. Others said that she was too focused on Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Another person who was trending? Arizona Senator John McCain. McCain's confusing line of questioning about the dual FBI investigations of Hillary Clinton and President Trump had some people wondering what was going on with the senator and former Republican nominee for president. Well, after the hearing, McCain's office issued a statement on social media saying, quote, "I get the sense from Twitter that my line of questioning today went over people's heads. Maybe going forward, I shouldn't stay up late watching the Diamondbacks night games," referring to the senator's home state baseball team, the Arizona Diamondbacks. The statement continues, quote, "What I was trying to get at was whether Mr. Comey believes that any of his interactions with the president rise to the level of obstruction of justice. While I missed an opportunity in today's hearing, I still believe that this question is important, and I intend to submit it in writing to Mr. Comey for the record." And with all that talk on social media, including the talk about Senator McCain on Twitter, there was one person who surprisingly wasn't tweeting, President Donald Trump. After rumors that Trump would live tweet the hearing, the president didn't send out any tweets during Comey's testimony. However, President Trump did have a familiar advocate tweeting his support, Donald Trump Jr., his son, who was doing a lot of tweeting and a lot of rebuttal to Comey's claims.
Many thanks to you, Andrew. International Edition's Andrew Palcheski. You can follow Andrew on Twitter at APAL. I am on Twitter as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. British Prime Minister Theresa May's gamble in calling an early election appears to possibly backfired after an exit poll is suggesting her Conservative Party, often called the Tories, could lose its majority in Parliament. The Labour Party, headed by Jeremy Corbyn, appears to be making higher gains than originally indicated in voter surveys. Theresa May was heckled by opposition supporters as she combined some campaigning with a tour of London. It was a difficult end to a tough campaign after three terrorist attacks in 2 months. May has put fighting terror at the top of the Conservative Party's agenda.
And if our human rights laws stop us from doing it, we'll change the laws so we can do it.
That pledge drew criticism from Jeremy Corbyn.
The way you deal with a threat to democracy is not by reducing democracy, it's by dealing with the threat. That means properly funding our police and security services.
Also, as the polls were closing late on Thursday, these Labour Party supporters were celebrating.
Very excited. Obviously, it would be amazing if they were the truth, but slightly cautious because we don't know what's going to happen. But ultimately, yeah. Take the Tories down.
Yeah, it's exciting. I'm really wondering how we're going to go. I think, obviously, with an exit poll like this, it's all up in the air. Like, it could change by quite a lot of seats. But at the moment, our feelings are really positive, really hopeful. I mean, I don't know if it's going to change how much it's going to change. But as long as they don't have a majority vote, then it's looking quite good for Labour.
Some observers are saying if there is a change in leadership in Britain with this election, it could lead to a period of political uncertainty and could throw Britain's negotiations to leave the European Union, also known as Brexit, into disarray. North Korea's official news media is reporting that the country successfully tested today a new ground-to-sea cruise rocket that is capable of striking enemy battleships staging a military attack. Pyongyang launched several land-to-sea missiles on Thursday as well, under the supervision of leader Kim Jong-un. RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett tells VOA's Victor Beatty each test appears to show an improving North Korean capability both to defend itself and develop an intercontinental ballistic missile force.
These are to demonstrate new capabilities, to suggest that they're advancing and covering new areas, but also to give Kim Jong-un some internal cover from the hits he's taking from the Security Council and elsewhere, from China in particular, on their coal import cutoff, trying to demonstrate that Kim Jong-un is still a god. He's still very powerful and capable of doing important things.
Are these land-to-ship missiles capable of carrying not just conventional but nuclear weapons?
Probably not nuclear. They're probably too small for that. But we really don't know at this stage. This could be something new, or it could be something in the category of missiles that they've fired before against shipping, but these are longer range than anything I'm familiar with.
One analyst suggested that these are in response to the U.S. nuclear submarine USS Cheyenne arriving at the South Korean port of Busan on Tuesday. And of course, the U.S. has two aircraft carriers and their support vessels in the Sea of Japan.
Yeah, the U.S. has been showing a lot of naval capability in the region, trying to demonstrate that we're prepared to try to deal with North Korea. But the missiles they launched probably don't have to do much with the submarine, because as long as it's submerged, the surface-to-ship missile isn't going to work. More pointed probably at the carrier groups, but those are probably standing off from North Korea more than 200 kilometers, so probably couldn't reach to the carrier groups. So it's probably more just a demonstration by North Korea than much of anything else.
This is their fourth missile test since Moon Jae-in took office in South Korea May 10, pledging to engage in dialogue with North Korea. Is that hope dead now?
Well, I don't know that it's dead. President Moon and his advisors are really intent on trying to work with North Korea. But besides these missile launches, the North Koreans rejected South Korean humanitarian organizations authorized by the Moon administration, rejected them coming into North Korea. So North Korea doesn't seem like it's anxious to be interacting with South Korea right now, and that will set President Moon back.
RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett speaking with my colleague Victor Beatty. A group of Native American activists from the Sioux tribe of Standing Rock, North Dakota, say they are going global with their fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. That story from Lisa Schlein.
Native American protesters have failed in their quest to stop the flow of oil through the Dakota Access Pipeline. Drilling began on June 1st. While they may have lost this battle, the activists say the war is far from over. They say they plan to hit corporations and banks where it hurts most, in their wallet. Rachel Heaton is a member of the Muckleshoot tribe and an indigenous leader in Seattle. She is one of four water protectors touring various countries and cities in Europe to drum up support for their cause.
We're going around and sharing our stories, as well as talking to the banks here in Europe that are invested in the fossil fuel projects on our lands. We're here to ask the banks to divest from the fossil fuel projects, as they are contributing to the genocide of our people, the environmental racism that continues to take place, as well as the violation of our treaty rights.
Oglala Sioux activist and hip-hop artist Natani Means, representing indigenous people, appealed to the UN Human Rights Council to hold the United States to account for what he described as brutality faced by protesters at Standing Rock. Means tells VOA he was one of nearly 800 water protectors arrested on what he calls bogus charges. He says the police entered tribal lands and arrested the protesters in violation of treaty rights with the federal government.
They came into our land. We were camped out on the pipeline route. They came and they forcefully removed us as we were unarmed. And I was arrested along with 170 other water protectors that day. I was arrested that day for standing for water. And I went in a nonviolent way, and I'm still fighting those charges today.
At the council, Means called on the Special Investigator on Freedom of Assembly and Peaceful Protest to visit the United States in order to investigate these human rights violations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in Washington, this is International Edition. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
In his 1915 theory of general relativity, physicist Albert Einstein proposed that mass can bend space-time. He predicted that when a distant star's light passed by a large object en route to the observer, the object's gravity can bend and brighten the starlight like a magnifying glass. This effect, called gravitational lensing, was confirmed in 1919 by English astrophysicist Arthur Eddington. Nearly 100 years later, a group of astronomers have confirmed Einstein's theory once again, after successfully replicating Eddington's experiment with a Hubble Space Telescope. The researchers used gravitational lensing to precisely calculate the mass of a white dwarf star some 17 to 19 light years away. The remains of a burnt-out regular star were measured to have a mass equal to about 68% of our own sun. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Tom Cruise and Oscar winner Russell Crowe star in a new version of the classic monster film, The Mummy. And as VOA's David Byrd tells us, this time the monster is played by actress Sophia Boutella, and she's out to seek revenge on those who imprisoned her in the desert.
It's ancient Egypt, and the princess Amenet is being groomed to be the country's next queen. But when her destiny is unjustly taken from her, she makes a deal with Set, the ancient god of the desert, storms, and chaos. The deal goes south, and Amenet is imprisoned in a heavily armored tomb beneath the sands. Flash forward to modern times, and soldier of fortune Nick Morton, played by Tom Cruise, plunders ancient sites for artifacts and sells them to the highest bidder. When Nick and his partner are attacked in the Middle East, the battle unearths, guess who? Amenet, who has had thousands of years to think about getting her revenge. At the film's New York premiere, Tom Cruise said that he loved the old Universal monster films, such as Boris Karloff's 1932 version of The Mummy.
You know, I love the whole idea of the dark universe. I remember, you know, movies used to have serials, and, you know, you go see the next version on a Saturday. And to have this dark universe where we're taking the Universal monsters, the ones that they really, in the 30s, that established Universal as a viable film studio, and they decided to make it into modern day and you know, to bring in this kind of big adventure, scares, humor to a modern audience.
It's not an exact science, this business.
And the business being?
Evil, Mr. Morton. Recognize, contain, examine, destroy. She is by far the most ancient we've ever encountered.
The modern telling also stars Oscar winner Russell Crowe as Dr. Henry Jekyll, the head of an organization called Prodigium. Algerian-born actress Sophia Boutella plays Aminet, fans will remember her, as the sword-footed gazelle of Kingsman, the Secret Service, and Jayla of Star Trek Beyond. Boutella says that she had to find some compassion for Aminet as a woman who was cheated and then thrown in a hole to rot forever.
I needed to find, you know, and I needed to have a good grab onto what happened to her and her circumstances. That's what helped me the most to go through everything that I had to go through, even the enormous amount of time in a makeup chair and why she is so evil. It's just I needed to have a specific reason because I don't think anybody's born evil. And I just held on to that. And I loved her and I just had compassion for her.
Director Alex Kurtzman says he grew up loving the Universal monster movies and he wanted to bring that kind of thrill to modern viewers.
I think that one of the things that for me defines the monsters is that you are scared of them and you feel for them. And it's a very unique thing to the Universal monster films. So the idea of honoring that tradition was important and paying homage to the classic, whether you're a fan of the Karloff films or the more modern Brendan Fraser films. But I wanted to bring something new to the table, and that's what we did.
Annabelle Wallace, who also stars in this year's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, Jake Johnson, and Courtney B. Vance are also in the cast. The Mummy is rated PG-13 for violence, action, and scary images, and for some suggestive content and partial nudity. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And we have to say goodbye to everyone, but thank you for joining us today on the Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. Latest world news is coming up shortly. Hope you'll stand by for that. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Greg Burns, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There has been a spike in violence in one of Africa's poorest and most war-torn countries, the Central African Republic, known as CAR. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs released a report this month saying that the frequency and brutality of attacks against communities have surged to levels last seen in 2014. Entire towns have been emptied, houses burnt down, and women and children brutally killed. The terrifying violence by armed militias in the CAR started in 2012 and intensified when a mostly Muslim rebel group, the Seleka, overthrew President François Bozizé in 2013. Atrocities committed by the Seleka gave rise to a predominantly Christian group to counter it, the Anti-Balaka, which similarly committed untold human rights abuses. Sectarian attacks by each group against each other and against innocent civilians devastated the country. An accord agreed to in 2015 by the rival militias requiring them to disarm, as well as a presidential election in 2016, raised hope for a new and more peaceful future for the country. But many armed rebels did not disarm, and violence has continued, and, as the UN has documented, recently escalated. The security situation in CAR deteriorated last month, leading to more than 300 people killed and over 100,000 displaced. In southeastern CAR, six peacekeepers from MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping mission in CAR, were killed near the town of Bangassou. In the central town of Bria, violence between rebel groups resulted in thousands of civilians pouring into makeshift camps. The United States is deeply concerned by the recent violence. In a written statement, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said, "We strongly condemn these acts of violence and the targeted attacks against humanitarian actors, whose sole purpose in the CAR is to provide life-saving support to the population." Spokesperson Nauert wrote that the United States mourns the deaths of the UN peacekeepers as well. The security and support provided by MINUSCA are essential for the CAR to move beyond crisis, she noted. We commend President Faustin Archange Touadéra and his government for their commitment to justice, the rule of law, and accountability for perpetrators of mass atrocities, including through the creation of the Special Criminal Court, said Ms. Nauert. The United States fully supports justice and reconciliation, not only as measures for individuals who have suffered, but as essential steps towards building a peaceful and inclusive CAR.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.